Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal for September 16th, 2004. I'm Amy Brown, here with co-host Meredith DeFrancesco. With the elections approaching, Mainers impacted by so-called free trade agreements are organizing and fighting back. Today, we'll talk with some of them, and we'll also have an update from one of the Passamaquoddy tribal members. They're trying to protect their community from the proposed LNG plant.
Maine has lost the highest percentage of jobs due to free trade in the country. This figure from those eligible for trade adjustment assistance and not taking into account secondary job loss. Maine recently passed pioneering legislation to establish a state commission that will study and give recommendations based on how trade agreements affect the state's economy and people. In the next weeks leading up to the elections, a number of town hall-style meetings entitled Don't Outsource Our Future will be hosted and conducted by unions and other groups throughout the state. The vote on CAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Agreement, which has recently added the Dominican Republic, is expected to be voted on sometime after the presidential election. Peter Copa, laid-off worker at Eastern Fine Paper in Brewer, and where he was also a union representative, spoke to us earlier. He is one of the organizers of this weekend's Don't Outsource Our Future meeting at the Greater Bangor Area Central Labor Council.
Peter Copa, I was formerly president of Local 403, Pace Local 403, Eastern Paper and Brewer. Well, I guess it started in 2000. The year 2000, we had lost a big tile back order. This is backing, paper backing, in our coder department, and it was lost to a Finnish company overseas. And also from the price of paper, it affected us business-wise. So in January this past year, they ended up going Chapter 7 and liquidating. It's something that's happening, you know, across the whole state and across the whole country, and it's too bad for everybody concerned. Of course, you've seen what's happened in this state, starting with Fort Kent and Millinocket and Dexter and Corinna and Winslow Waterville area, and the list goes on.
How many people were laid off at Eastern Fine?
In the year 2000, we had about 375 working there.
And where have people gone now from here?
A lot of people are in training right now. Probably 50% are in training, some type of training. Ones that got laid off in June will be running out of unemployment and have to find some kind of work here in January, and the rest of us have until next June. Meanwhile, we've seen, you know, other paper companies go down. Some have moved operations, you know, to different parts of the country or different parts of the world, wherever they can. It's cheaper for them to do business, and it's not a reflection of our work ethic, or it's just hard on everybody. I think if we all work together and we make sure these issues are at the top of the agenda for whoever is elected in the fall, that these are important to the country, that we have good paying jobs and health insurance, and that just it's a domino thing. It helps everybody in the whole. It'll help everybody in the whole country. To put this issue, you know, get the candidates speaking about this. To us, one of the most important issues right now for the whole country is losing our jobs and losing our manufacturing base in this country. It's what built this country, was built on manufacturing, and it's important to have a good infrastructure. And instead of lower-paying jobs, you know, service-area jobs, we need manufacturing in this country to be strong.
But what do you think of this current administration's policies or reactions to this trend?
The current administration, I think it's not all their fault. These laws were put in place, but they haven't reacted to it. They seem to be, how can I say, they haven't been there, and they don't understand what is happening to this country. They say they're creating jobs, and on paper it looks like they're creating jobs, but they're lower-paying jobs, around $8 an hour, with no benefits. And it's not the same. You can't raise a family on that. You can't put kids through college on that. You can't buy a new vehicle on that. You really have trouble just staying alive, never mind trying to make the economy done better. But it all boils down to we just can't lose any more of these manufacturing jobs. All these mill towns, a lot of these towns were built around these manufacturing facilities, and it's for the whole country. It's the same thing. This is an important issue, not just for us that have been laid off, but this affects everybody. For every 7 manufacturing jobs, there's 2 other jobs affected when you have layoffs like this. Stores that are in the vicinity, and along with manufacturing, you know, they buy supplies. It's not like a call center where you've got telephones and computers and very little paper. But, you know, we buy pallets and we buy cartons and we buy all kinds of chemicals and different things. And so it's a domino effect. When you lose one facility, it affects everybody.
We have with us today by phone Matt Schlobaum with the Maine Fair Trade Campaign. Welcome, Matt.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
So why don't we first start with some background information on trade agreements that have been around for a while, and we've been acutely aware of their effects over the years, and that's manifested through various massive mobilizations and as well as legislative work. Can you talk about some of the background?
Sure. I think when people think about trade issues, it comes as a bit of a surprise that they've become such a hot-button issue, especially in the last 10 or 15 years, because normally people think about, you know, goods crossing borders, and that's been going on for a long time. And while there have been some disputes about tariff levels and quotas and whatnot, for the most part, it's a pretty straightforward debate. But I think things really started to change with the passage of NAFTA in 1994. And the reason things really changed was because NAFTA was really a revolutionary agreement in that it went further than trade agreements had ever gone before in the past. And what happens with a lot of trade agreements, and what I think is the real important thing to stress in them, is that what they're really doing is, because they are treaties, they're setting the rules for the global economy. So with NAFTA, we had an agreement that really set the laws of the land for the U.S., Mexico, and Canada, the 3 countries that were parties to the agreement. And one of the big problems with these trade agreements is that the general public and organized constituencies and citizens really aren't involved in the shaping of trade policy. What we have is corporations writing the rules of these trade agreements and writing the rules for the global economy. And what we've seen is that the rules that are getting laid down in NAFTA or the WTO or some of the subsequent agreements, what we've seen with those rules is that they've really been rules that have benefited the largest multinational corporations at the expense of the rest of us. So we heard Peter talking about the impact that some of these trade and other economic policies are having on workers. Well, workers aren't at the table. Unions aren't at the table when we're setting trade policies. Multinational corporations are, but working people are not involved in the setting of that policy. So we haven't seen trade agreements that really respect workers' rights and that have labor standards at the core. And these trade policies are really impacting more and more realms of public life and causing more and more negative impacts in many cases for a lot of different people. So I think that's part of the reason they've become such a hot-button issue and have really drawn so much attention in the last 10 years.
Let's talk about the current legislation, our current trade agreements that are being proposed, namely the Central American Free Trade Agreement, CAFTA, and also the FTAA, Free Trade Area of the Americas, would extend to all of Latin America, and the concerns that they would replicate some of the effects of NAFTA, and then also some of the new issues that it brings up.
Sure. So NAFTA was passed in 1994, and it went into effect, and we've really seen 10 years of, you know, we have a 10-year track record of NAFTA, and in many ways it hasn't been pretty. We've seen a growth in job loss in the manufacturing sector. We've seen an increase in economic insecurity. We've seen our democracy undermined in a variety of ways. We've seen power and rights shifted away from citizens and into the hands of multinational corporations. And what's really, I think, most dangerous about NAFTA and most problematic about it is that it's become the model for all future trade agreements. So before NAFTA was even finished, negotiators and corporate free trade agreement backers were pushing to have NAFTA expanded to the entire Western Hemisphere, to 34 countries, and they were calling that the FTA FTAA, or the Free Trade Area of the Americas. And they've been working to finish negotiations on the FTA for the last 10 years. But they've really gotten bogged down and run into some trouble because, for some of the reasons that have been mentioned, because they don't involve the broader public in these negotiations, because the track records, especially in the countries of the Southern Hemisphere, have been really negative with a lot of these economic restructuring initiatives and trade policies. So there's been a growing opposition to the FTA, especially in South America, but also in the U.S., and the negotiations have really ground to a halt for some reasons internal to the negotiations and other reasons external, where governments are starting to say, I don't know if this is such a good idea, and it really feels like corporations are benefiting and the rest of us are getting left out in the cold a bit. So in response to the FTAA getting really stuck in the mud, the U.S. Trade Representative's Office and some of the biggest corporations that are pushing these free trade deals decided to pursue a different strategy, where they would try and get that agenda of a hemispheric-wide free trade zone kind of more piece by piece. And that's where CAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Agreement, really comes in. CAFTA, as you mentioned at the top of the show, is a trade agreement between the U.S. and six Central American countries. And it's the text has been written. The agreement is finalized. It could go for a congressional vote any day now. It's looking like it almost certainly will not come up during the election season, but it's before Congress. It's out there. It's written. We've been able to look at it and analyze the agreement. And from our vantage point at the Maine Fair Trade Campaign, which is a statewide coalition working on trade issues, we really think that there are a lot of big problems with CAFTA. It really replicates the failings of the NAFTA model. It doesn't take all the comments and criticisms that fair trade advocates have made for the last 10 years. It doesn't incorporate those into the agreement. So some of the things that we see in CAFTA is it continues this model where there are no substantial labor rights or labor protections in the agreement. One of the big criticisms of NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, was that labor provisions and core labor rights were not even in the core of the agreement. They were a side agreement that was not enforced and has had no meaningful impact. And CAFTA does put labor provisions into the agreement, but they really have no teeth to them. They're not enforceable. They're not meaningful. And so they're not going to be raising standards up throughout the countries that are party to the agreement. And that's really what we need to be seeing. International trade is a good thing, right? International trade has been happening for a long time. But when the rules of international trade are set in such a way that they drive down standards and they benefit a tiny minority of the world's people at the expense of the rest, it's really unfair.
Can you also talk a little bit briefly about how services would be affected?
Sure. One of the new kind of frontiers that's being impacted in trade policy is the realm of public services. So within the World Trade Organization, there are agreements that are directly targeting services. Excuse me. And what's interesting about trade and services, as it's called, is that in a trade agreement that focuses on services, what's really targeted to be removed are the regulations that regulate the public service sector. So whereas with the trade in goods, when countries were trading shoes or automobiles, it was really tariffs and quotas that they were working to remove and to bring down. But when it comes into the trade of public services, what the companies are trying to have removed is service sector regulations that worked often to protect the public service sector. So
maybe you can mention what some of those services are.
Sure. It's a huge range of economic sectors, and one way to think about it is, anything that you can't drop on your foot is a service. So things like education and healthcare and water and
telecommunications,
and on financial regulations, investment regulations, all of those things would fall into the service sector.
And they've indeed been a big sticking point for many of the Latin American countries.
Yeah, it definitely has. I mean, there's a big concern in Costa Rica and some of the other countries that their public service sectors, which are really essential to the public well-being and people's public health and survival, are really going to be undermined by this, because corporations see these public service sectors as a new market from which they can make money from. And so they're targeting public services as an area where they want regulations removed. They don't want countries to be able to say that, you know, we want to only have government-run public services. They want to really be able to have access to those markets.
Yes, and this the concern would be spreading to the United States as well. Just in the interest of time, can you briefly bring us up to date on what's happening with the commission that was established after this recent legislation?
Sure. This past legislative session in Maine, after a very broad-based and strong organizing effort by lots of citizens and organizations in the state, legislation was passed to create the Maine Citizen Trade Policy Commission, which brings together legislators and citizens from different organized constituencies to really monitor the impact that trade policies are having on us as a state, having on Maine's economy and Maine's democracy and Maine's public services, and to really play a role of giving the public a voice in these matters, and also trying to do a lot of work to look after Maine's interests, to do a lot of communication with our congressional delegation, with the U.S. Trade Representative's office, with the state legislature, and other entities that will have an influence or have some concerns about trade issues. So the commission, the appointments to that commission have been finalized. There are 17 members from the business community, organized labor, public health, agriculture, legislators, human rights organizations, and the commission should be getting off the ground hopefully sometime in early October and beginning its work to really understand better how Maine's being impacted and to really give voice to some of those concerns and make sure that Maine isn't left out in the shaping of trade policy.
And Matt, just quickly, when it comes to the presidential election, we're hearing that Bush would continue the status quo, and Kerry says that he would eliminate tax incentives for moving jobs overseas. Does anyone believe that the tax incentives are really why people are moving jobs overseas? What are you hearing from people who are interested in this topic in terms of whether or not they think the Kerry plan, as he stated it so far, is going to be sufficient to turn this around?
Right. I think it certainly won't be sufficient. I think it's, you know, it's a piece of a larger problem. I think there are much bigger issues that need to be addressed and that hopefully will be addressed if the public pressures for those. So I think, you know, tax policy is certainly an element of this whole dynamic of capital mobility and plants closing and moving overseas. I think there are other really crucial pieces, you know, such as trade policy, such as economic control and where that really resides that need to be addressed if we're going to really get to the core of some of these issues, as well as raising standards up all around the world so that companies can't exploit huge wage differentials between countries and workforces.
Let's move to the action steps that you're participating in and many different organizations and unions are participating on. Tell us about these Don't Outsource our future town hall meetings and some of the work that you're doing around lobbying Snow and Collins.
Sure. A number of groups are working to put on these Don't Outsource Our Future town meetings, and they're really designed as a forum where people can talk about how they're being impacted by economic policies like trade agreements, like outsourcing, like corporate control of the economy. And so there's four of these set up currently. The first one's going to be this Sunday in Brewer at the Greater Bangor Area Central Labor Council from 4 to 6 p.m. Congressman Bernie Sanders, an independent from Vermont, is going to be there. And it's really going to be people talking about how they're experiencing this economy, how it's impacting them directly, people like Peter Coppa, who we heard at the top of the show, and others. Then it's going to be folks really comparing where the different candidates stand on issues like trade and outsourcing and economic policies and talking about what we can do about it, how we can make a difference on these issues. So the first of those meetings is this Sunday, September 19th, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. at the Greater Bangor Central Labor Council, which is on 20 Air Street in Brewer, and there's a free cookout to follow. On Saturday, September 25th, there's a similar style meeting in Millinocket from 1:30 to 3 p.m., on Tuesday, September 28th at 6:30, there's a similar Don't Outsource Our Future meeting in Lewiston from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. And on Thursday, September 30th, there's a similar meeting at 6:30 p.m. in Skowhegan at the Pace Union Hall, Local 9.
For more information, where can people
For more information, people could call 777-6387.
And do you want to talk very briefly about your interactions with Snow and Collins' office?
Sure. As part of the Maine Fair Trade campaign, the statewide coalition is encouraging Maine's entire congressional delegation to oppose CAFTA and to really work for fair trade agreements. We fully support international trade. We just think that the agreements that are set need to be fair and work for the majority of people. So we're opposing CAFTA. We've heard back from Congressman Mike Mishu and Congressman Tom Allen, Maine's two representatives, that they both are going to oppose the agreement. And we're actively working to get Senator Snow and Senator Collins to vote against the agreement. We've met with Senator Snow, and we've met with the staff from Senator Collins' office, and they're both still undecided, but considering the agreement. They recognize that there are problems with this, and they need to hear from the public on this. So we're strongly encouraging people to contact their senators and encourage them to vote against CAFTA. If people would like to call Senator Collins, she can be reached at 202-224-2523, or she could be reached in her Bangor office if people want to make a local call at 945-0417. And if people would like to contact Senator Snow to encourage her to vote against the Central American Free Trade Agreement, CAFTA, she could be reached in Washington, D.C. at 202-224-5344 or in Bangor at 945-0432. And we really strongly encourage people to contact their senators and encourage them to vote against CAFTA.
Thank you so much for joining us, Matt Schlobaum, with the Maine Fair Trade Campaign. We're briefly going to hear from Stefano Tijerina from Peace Through Inter-American Community Action, who has been one of the groups working along with the Maine Fair Trade Campaign on a Fair Trade Fest on October 2nd. Welcome, Stefano.
Oh, hi. Thank you very much.
Can you just in the next couple minutes give us a brief idea of what the Fair Trade Fest is, what it'll entail, and we will have more coverage on this later.
Well, yeah, the Fair Trade Fest is basically a response and an alternative to what free trade agreements offer in regards to access to goods and services. So this will be the first trade fest in the state, and I think one of the first in the nation, and it will be basically to provide the people of Bangor the opportunity to buy clean clothes, in other words, sweat-free clothing, and
sweatshop-free.
Yeah, sweatshop-free clothing, and also to allow people who are interested in issues that are being very big right now, like, for example, what Matt was talking about the privatization of public services. There will be people there educating the community about what's going on in this area, about the conflict between big businesses and small businesses and how free trade agreements at this time are affecting small businesses. And that is on the vendor side, no? And on the educational side, there will be a lot more other activities for people to learn and be more familiar about what a fair trade world would be instead of the world that is being designed right now through the free trade agreements that we're currently exposed to.
And you'll have a couple of speakers coming from a Nicaraguan cooperative.
Yeah, we will have Ruth Mena and Yadira Vallejos, which are both from the Nueva Vida Women's Sewing Cooperative in Nicaragua. And these are people that are touring right now the United States, bringing to the U.S. Congress, a petition signed recently at the 5th Mesoamerican Forum in San Salvador, El Salvador, where more than 1,000 signatures were collected from the people who are trying to bring a message to the United States reps saying, look, free trade agreements are not going to be beneficial to us. They're not going to help us. And, here's a petition. This is really what's going to happen to us with this trade agreement. And they will be the featured speakers at the event, and they will share their experience, and they will share their views on how they've been affected by free trade agreement issues.
Thank you. And how can people find out more information about this event?
People can go to our website. It's www.pica.ws. And we're trying to promote the event around the city, around the region, and as much as possible, we encourage people to come and participate. This will be a really, really interesting moment for the city of Bangor and for Maine in general.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And finally, last month, the Passamaquoddy tribal leadership at Pleasant Point held a referendum on the reservation location of a liquefied natural gas terminal on the reservation by energy developers Quaddy Bay LLC. The non-binding referendum favored the LNG terminal 192 to 132 amidst great controversy concerning lack of information and dialogue on the impacts of a terminal on the tribe's environment and culture and the quickness of the vote and its validity. This week, Passamaquoddy tribal member David Moses Bridges will attend an Indigenous Rights Council meeting of the Oil and Gas Accountability Project in Denver, Colorado. At this workshop, Indigenous activists working on energy issues will network and explore opportunities for collaborative campaigns concerning oil and gas companies targeting tribal lands. We spoke earlier with Vera Francis of the Passamaquoddy tribe.
Well, I don't think at any other time, especially in our history in Maine, especially for Maine tribes, has there ever been a limited liability corporation established which has so quickly begun to drive Maine Indian policy? I mean, that is absolutely astounding. And I am surprised that there has been no response to that, because it certainly is an indicator of a trend, and I think it needs to be addressed. I would say that, you know, we are a distressed community, you know, no doubt about it, economically distressed. But who is responsible, you know, who has the responsibility to oversee and monitor, you know, these kind of situations of such, you know, disparity in power, especially when it involves corporations? Because what's happening right now is there is a potential transfer of ownership of tribal lands and waters. And I think at the very heart of our response is that we question the validity of that. In other words, we have not consented to any transfer of ownership of tribal lands and waters, because we are the actual owners and occupants. We have yet to consent. We have not. A lease would be a transfer of ownership. You know, we have not consented to that. We are, you know, we are in fact challenging that, and as often as we can. You know, we question the validity of this agreement that they're, you know, that they are going to announce soon. We're still organizing to respond. I mean, we haven't stopped. We're still very concerned that the process has moved so quickly, and there has been very little interest in the fact that the community, the membership, have yet to really know firsthand what is entailed in hosting a liquefied natural gas import terminal in the center of a residential area. We have yet to openly debate, you know, any pros or cons to that. And our hope is to organize to change that. In other words, we still are purposely seeking the reversal of that decision to host. There's a new council foreman, and we always have an opportunity to go back to our processes, and we will do that. It's not, you know, it is not a closed system as some people might think. It's very open.
And what are you being told by the current leadership right now?
Well, they're not saying much, but their representatives are obviously making very strong statements that there's not much anybody can do about it. We disagree.
And are you hearing anything from Quaddy Bay LLC directly right now?
No, not a word. other than through the legal advisor, and I'm not sure if he represents the tribe or if he represents Quaddy Bay LLC, would like the answer to that question.
RadioAct will be covering this issue more extensively through a series of interviews on Tuesday, September 21st from 10 to 11 in the morning, including an additional statement by Vera Francis called Eroding the Spirit of Sovereignty, a Question of Consent.
And you've been listening to RadioActive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown. Our website is www.freespeech.org/RAN. Joel Mann engineered today's program. Please join us again next Thursday at 4 for RadioActive.